This is episode 32 of the Mentoring Developers podcast. Head on over to mentoringdevelopers.com/episode32 for links, show notes, and highlights. I think you'll enjoy it.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hey there. Today I'll be talking to David Silva. David is a front-end developer for a company called Doctor On Demand. It's in San Francisco. He's originally from Colombia. He's been doing programming for a long time. He is a front-end developer, works in AngularJS. But there's one thing about his story that's very different, very striking, kind of dangerous. Something he did in the past that shocked me, frankly, when I heard it. So let's talk to David. Before we start the show, I have a favor to ask you. You know, this show is all about new and aspiring software developers and their mentors. And I want to interview and I want to bring out stories from all of you, whether you are a junior developer, you want to be a developer? Maybe you work with developers, hire developers, maybe you mentor them. All of these stories put together build for us a complete picture, and then we can learn from our experiences and find out how we can be more successful, more inclusive, how we can have diversity, how we can encourage people to get better and encourage people to come to this field. If you want me to interview you, or if you want to be on a discussion panel, go ahead and type mentoringdevelopers.com/join in your web browser. This will open a Google form where you can tell me what topics interest you and what dates and times you're available for about an hour or so. Everyone is welcome, and I would be thrilled to get a chance to talk to you. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you at mentoringdevelopers.com/join. Hi everyone. Today I have with me David Silva. And David, you did something really interesting back in the day. You went to a meeting with the FARC. What's the FARC?
FARC is a terrorist group that originated in Colombia in the 50s. It started as a rebellious group of farmers and people that were not happy with the way the government was treating them. And little by little, they started buying more weapons, and they eventually got involved with drug trafficking. And now they're a pretty strong organization in Colombia.
Wow. And so we're going to get into how you got into the peace negotiations with the FARC, a terrorist organization. And yeah, that's going to be an interesting story. But first, we want to know a little bit about you. How do you see yourself? Who is David Silva?
Well, it's a big question. I'm a software developer at a healthcare company. I originally went to art school, but I wasn't very happy with the results. So I started programming on my own about 7 years ago. I enjoy programming a lot, but I also do photography and painting, and I'm living on the Bay Area now, and I really like it.
So you live in the San Francisco Bay Area, you're living the life, you're working in a company that is a mid-sized startup kind of company, and so how do you like California?
I really like it. It's a very interesting place, lots of good opportunities, especially for working on what I do. Lots of talented people to meet, events to go out to. And the weather is nice, although I would prefer a little warmer, but I can live with it.
Yeah, in the north, Northern California is not as warm as what people might think, especially near Berkeley, San Francisco, with the ocean breeze. It's actually can be pretty chilly. But down inland, the more inland you go, San Jose and further inland, I think you start to get warmer. And if you go LA and San Diego, you're golden, right?
Yes, here is too cold for me. I actually didn't know it was cold here when I moved here, so I didn't bring jackets, and that's one of the first things that I bought once I got here.
Well, you should count yourself lucky that you don't have to live in the Northeast. Now, that's really cold.
Yeah.
At least it never freezes in San Francisco.
Yeah, that's a great thing. Although I enjoy going to Tahoe every now and then and enjoy the snow there.
Yeah, Tahoe is awesome. Yeah. California is awesome. California, are you hearing? California yeah. seems like this living organism, right? It is not a place. It's a thing. It's a living, breathing. It's a thing that it's a dragon that spits you out, and either it'll accept you and you will be happy, or it'll just spit you out, and you're just going to you have to leave. Which is what happened to me because I was in California, but you know I didn't really get along so. With California, the California people are great, but I think I found it hard to make my career there. So I moved on to the Midwest, which worked out really well for me. All right, so how did you become a programmer? Because that's not what you studied.
No, I studied programming since I was a kid. But I'm not very good at math or physics, so I didn't want to go to school for that. I decided to go to art school instead, where I will be able to learn some programming, but not will be required to learn math and physics. That ended up being a little too hard to, and it was not what I really wanted to do. So I dropped out of art school, and then I started programming on my own about 7 years ago. I got my first job.
Okay, so 7 years ago, you got your first job. Before you got your first job, did you write any programs before then?
Not for work. I wrote a few games when I was in school and when I was a kid, and a lot of basic stuff when I was learning, like calculators and Visual Basic. One of the funniest games, I did a copy of Frog in Lingo, which was a lot of code, because I don't know if you've used it before. Adobe bought that product and killed it. It was called Macromedia Director. And every layer or every sprite on the screen was like an object, and all the code was contained on that object. So it was really messy and really complicated, but it was fun. And when I started my first like job, I started doing Joomla templates for small businesses. It was an easy start.
Okay, so you got your first job. I want to know, was it in this country or was it in Colombia?
In Colombia, yeah. I only moved to the area 3 years ago.
Okay, so how did you get that first job?
In Colombia?
Mm-hmm.
I forgot where I met this guy, but I met a freelancer. I was looking around shopping for jobs, and I met a freelancer that was a designer and needed somebody to code his designs into HTML, CSS, and PHP.
Okay, so you just met somebody who needed some work, and you said, sure, I'll do it. And that's how you got started. Was it easy for you to come to the U.S. to work? Did you have to do anything special? Because, you know, I'm assuming that you wanted to work in the Silicon Valley. It's the Silicon Valley. Everybody wants to be here. But the question is, not everybody gets to come here. So why do you think you were able to do it?
It was kind of funny, I guess, because programmers in Colombia are not cool as they are in Silicon Valley. Like, you're in Silicon Valley, you get paid well, and you're respected in the company, lots of job security. But in Colombia, it's not like that. So when I was doing well in my career in Colombia, I felt that it would be amazing to, you know, come to a place where you can be a nerd and everybody's a nerd, and it's, you know, you're like, people are cool with that, and you can have other friends that are programmers and go to more events. So I was really looking forward to that. There was a hackathon in Colombia that I won, and the prize was like a ticket and 2 weeks of stay in Silicon Valley. So I decided, we won that hackathon, and I decided, well, I'm going to go to Silicon Valley with, you know, free ticket, and then we're going to have like housing for 2 weeks, and if during those 2 weeks I'm able to get a job and find another place to live, I'll stay. If not, I'll go back to Colombia. And I was able to get a job and find a house in those 2 weeks, and I ended up staying.
That's some kind of a record. In 2 weeks, you were able to come in, get, you know, acclimatize. Obviously, it's a bit of a different country, it's different culture, different language, and you're able to get housing, get a job. I'd love to know how you did that.
Mostly luck. I don't usually recommend other people doing that unless you're willing to, you know, risk it. I guess it's like a huge gamble. Housing wasn't that hard. I was in an event and I met this random person that had just rented a house with 10 rooms and was looking for people to live on that house. And I was like, yeah, sure. So it wasn't that expensive. So it was my first place. It was a place on Berkeley. That's how I ended up in Berkeley. And I stayed on that house for like 6 months. It was pretty nice. I was living with 9 other people. And then job was through AngelList. I found a job that wasn't paying that great, but it was okay because it was my first job here. So just that. AngelList was a very useful resource then.
Tell us about AngelList, because I'm not sure a lot of people know that there is this thing called AngelList that is very unique. Why do you go there? What can you find out? And how does it help you get a job?
So AngelList is like a database for startups. You can find information about startups, like how much funding they have, who's working there, all sorts of things. It's pretty interesting if you're researching into startups. It has a job board too, which I found really interesting because you can get in touch directly with the founders, especially in the smaller companies. So it kind of works like Tinder in a way. You say that you're interested in a job, then the person from the jobs looks at your profile, and if they like you, they click interest. They're interested too, and AngelList sends you both an intro email.
Great. So it's a way to get introduced to startups. And
yeah,
it's sort of an indirect way of doing job search. And it's very smart because these are companies that are really looking to hire people, and they don't have the name recognition, and maybe they don't even have the money to hire top talent. So if you're starting out, they will more likely take a chance on you, especially if you're an unknown. And once you get the first gig, your first 6 months, a year of experience, and you have some recommendations, some testimonials from people who like your work, then you're often, you know, you can go off and do your own thing, or you can join a bigger company if you like, right? Did you stick with that first company? Did you stay with them for a couple of months and then move on? What did you do?
I only stayed with them for like 4 weeks. I didn't like them a lot and it didn't work out. But it was great because the first job to get here, if you haven't been in Silicon Valley, is really hard to get because a lot of companies don't trust the experience that you have outside of Silicon Valley. Especially if you're coming from Latin America, they will be like, and especially if you don't have a college degree, they'll be like, you've been programming for 5 years, but that doesn't really mean shit to us. So, but once you have like a Silicon Valley company on your resume, it's a lot easier to get the other jobs after that.
Even if it is just a few weeks, that's incredible. But that's so true because people are, yeah, these companies are really, really looking very hard, and they're just looking for some kind of validation to make sure, do you have what it takes? If somebody hired you, anybody they recognize hired you, that means at least you're qualified.
Yeah, I was working for that company and I didn't like it a lot. And I went to an event and somebody at that event was like, oh, you're pretty good at JavaScript and we're starting this company. Would you like to work for us? And the salary was like twice what I was making. So I was like, oh, yeah, no brainer. So, and it was in Berkeley too. So I quit the other job and I moved to a different company. And then on that company, I stayed for like 6 months and then they ran out of money, which kind of happens often in Silicon Valley. So, and then I was working for a media company and then I started working on where I'm working at right now.
I want to know, you changed a few companies. Every time you got a new job, did you negotiate the salary and benefits? Are you like a hard negotiator, or do you just, you know, take what they give you, and if you don't like it, you move on? But I want to know if you think that negotiation works or not.
It does, depending on the position that you're in. At first, I wasn't able to negotiate much because, you know, I was kind of like experimenting and seeing. So it's kind of took what came over. But for my current position, we did have some like rounds of negotiating, and I'm very happy with the results of that. So it really depends on the stage that you're in.
Also depends on the confidence that you have and your ability to get another job. If this negotiation, if it falls apart, you'll have something else. It's self-belief. I want to know, how long did that negotiation take place? Because I think that's something that a lot of people just don't know. They don't know if they ever negotiate. Is it something they say, okay, well, I'll let you know tomorrow and within a day? Because, you know, the recruiters are going to push your buttons. They're going to ask you to give me an answer right now. Oh, if this offer goes away at midnight tomorrow or something like that. But I think in reality, negotiations can go on for days, sometimes weeks. But I want to know from your experience, how long do you think negotiation can reasonably go?
All the jobs that I've had, I talked directly with the CEO. So the negotiations were just a few minutes. Like, I will say, I'm looking for this much money. And they will say, we're offering this and we'll try to reach an agreement. If no agreement was possible, then I wouldn't bother. But sometimes they will be like, I can't give you that much money, but I will let you work from home. So, or sometimes they'll be like, no, we can give you that much money, but you know, you'll get all the other benefits like healthcare and whatever. So this is not always about the money. Sometimes people have other priorities. The company I'm working for, I work remote. I've been working for it for 2 years and I'm pretty happy there. And it's great to, manage my own schedule and everything. It's a lot better than having gotten a little more money.
Yeah, especially in startups where they're cash starved. A lot of times they don't have the leeway to give you more money, but they could give you maybe other benefits like working from home, maybe take extra days off. You know, if they're giving you 2 weeks off, you say, well, if you can't give me more money, I would like to have 4 weeks off. And they might be able to offer you that because at least they're not spending the money. But in the end, you still benefit because you can use that time to work something on the side, make some extra money, or you can go on a vacation. Either way, you're going to be better off if you try to negotiate. So, well, it's my advice to people. Even if you think they're not going to budge, it doesn't hurt to ask.
Yeah, and even if you don't really have the confidence, it's really good to try anyway. Like, I don't know, some people I've talked to and they're like, oh, I'm afraid that if I try, they're going to say no. But, just try. There's no reason why not.
Right. Okay, so now you came from Colombia. You started your first job and then immediately after that, you had to get another job. But then you settled in. You're like, okay, this is a good job. Now you are going through sprints. Week after week, you are writing code. You are interacting with people. But you're still maybe a little bit different from mainstream Americans. And you would have some differences. Did you ever feel that you had to work extra hard to prove yourself because perhaps you were considered an outsider? Perhaps you had to do something that you thought was unreasonable, or how was your experience fitting in?
Maybe at first I have to like do a little extra, but I feel pretty comfortable right now. But it's always probably like that at first. If you don't have if you don't have the friends or like the people to back you up or anything on, projects to show, you have to make up for that in a way or another. And like, I understand that. I helped hire a couple people in the company that I work for now. And seeing it from the other side gives you like some empathy because, companies have deadlines and money and investors and lots of stockholders. It's not very easy to find a company that will just gamble on somebody just because you're nice or because you say that you went to a boot camp or something. Like, you have to really show how you can be adding value to the company. And without experience at first, it is really important to make up for it in some way or another.
Okay, so you started your job. Now, did you have a mentor? Did you have somebody that sort of helped you out, or did the company say, okay, if you have issues, if you need help, or if you're stuck somewhere, go talk to that guy. Did you have somebody like that as you were going through, you know, your first, second, third jobs?
I had somebody like that on my second job ever a while ago. It was really useful to me learning from somebody, you know, older and that had a lot more experience, because there's a lot of things that have to do with programming, managing your schedules, designing software, planning, managing clients, communicating with managers. So it was extremely useful for me to be talking to a more senior person before, and I don't think I would have been able to, or like, come up with the answers on my own, or if I had, it would have taken me a lot longer. So it saved me a lot of times and a lot of headaches to know somebody when I was starting.
Have you been in a position where you could help a new person come up to speed and be the mentor for somebody?
I spent a lot of time mentoring, actually, at a few boot camps and events in the Bay Area. I also have, like, or in, also online, like, I'll go and answer people's questions every now and then. And there's, like, a few people that they reach out to me with certain frequency for help. And I'm always, if I have the time, I'm always happy to help.
Okay, so what kind of people come to you for help? Because you have experience. Certainly, you have a lot of experience. But you have experience in, I'm guessing you have a lot of experience in Angular, because we talked about this, mm-hmm. and certain other things. Is that what they kind of want to ask you about, some technologies that you worked on? Or do you think they have more, you know, other non-technical problems?
No, a lot of things. Like, I'm very good at Angular and JavaScript, but I also help sometimes people, like, what do you call it, like, how to improve your resume, what type of events you should go to, and what, which ones you should avoid, type of people you want to talk to, and how to use different tools to help you get jobs faster. There's a lot of other skills that you can use to program.
Okay, so you must have made a lot of mistakes along the way. What are some of your mistakes that you did as you were, you know, getting your first job or getting your second job or working in an environment that was new to you? Is there anything that you'd like to change about how you went about things?
Not really, actually. I'm really, really satisfied with the results so far.
All right. So it's good that you didn't make a lot of mistakes. Well, I'll tell you that I made a lot of mistakes when I was working in different industries and different places. A lot of times, as interpersonal relationships and relationships with your managers, your peers, your clients, they're difficult sometimes to manage. There are some skills that we need to learn as developers, and there are some skills we need to learn as humans. And sometimes it's hard to have all those skills. It's hard to know how to talk to somebody, you know?
I mean, I definitely did mistakes, yes, obviously, but I guess, you know, it's the type of mistakes where you learn certain stuff that I couldn't have learned otherwise. So I'll probably, if I had the chance to start over, I'll probably kind of make them again, I guess. Some were inevitable and some were very valuable lessons.
So you like to make mistakes so you can learn from them. Okay, yeah. That's pretty good. All right, now, do you feel like you have to keep your skills up to date a lot, and is that a little bit of a challenge for you?
It's yes and no, I guess. I guess the biggest challenge is trying to know what to focus on, because there's so many things coming out every day, like new frameworks and new languages, and everybody thinks they're doing it the right way, and everybody wants to be the new, everybody wants to have, like, their own style guide and everything. So it can be the biggest challenge is just, you know, being comfortable with what you know and having, like, a list of things you want to improve and learn that, and not get, like, saturated with information. Because trying to keep up with everything, it's, one, impossible, and second, you'll be wasting a lot of time and not getting your job done.
So you have to pick your battles. You can't win everywhere. You need to figure out what are the important technologies or techniques or skills that you need to learn. What are you going to be known for? right? People talk about personal branding. Like if I know David Silva, I should think about JavaScript. I should think about Angular. I should think about, I don't know, something else. But I shouldn't say programmer, because if I say programmer, that doesn't really tell me enough information for me to make any judgment call, right? If I have a project and I know that I need to build an interactive user interface that needs to work in a single page type fashion where you need to change something that goes on, but the page appears to be an application in its own right. If I need to do that, I might say I need somebody perhaps with some front-end skills, maybe JavaScript, Angular. And then immediately I will think of David Silva, because I know David keeps talking about Angular and JavaScript. So, but if you just talk to people about being a programmer, being a developer, being
JavaScript sometimes people will be like, oh, you're very good in JavaScript. I have this, I don't know, React question. And I'm like, well, give an hour to read the documentation. I can answer, but I can't answer on the spot. Yeah.
Right. So essentially we need to, all of us, we need to keep reminding ourselves to narrow down our focus to something that we can reasonably learn. We can't learn everything, and we shouldn't even try. We should be known for a thing, and that's what we call a personal brand. All right, so how...
I guess some people are good at a lot of things, I guess, but you will never be great at a lot of things. Like some people are mediocre at best at a bunch of things, but it's really hard to find somebody that's like extremely good at like Postgres and Django and Angular. Like it would be kind of hard.
Right.
And at companies in the size, like the company that I work at, we value more, like a specialization. Like obviously every now and then somebody needs help on the back end, and I'll, or, you know, or if I need to fix something, I won't be like, oh, hey, boss, can you fix this for me? Like I will go and I'll do it myself. Like I will learn a lot of small things, but it's better to choose something and become really good at that something.
Yeah, I should mention that a lot of companies are looking for full stack developers. I'm not knocking full stack developers or this idea of having somebody who knows the full stack from database up to the front end. It's really valuable, and I think all of us know how to make applications from front to back. It's very few people. If you're in a web development space, then you generally know how to get around. But we're talking about keeping your skills up to date, because there are going to be new versions, new techniques, new technologies that will keep coming out in each one of these spheres. And you can't keep up with Postgres and MySQL and Oracle and Ruby on Rails and Django and Ember and Angular and ES6 and ES2015 and 2016. You cannot be somebody who knows everything about all of these things. You should certainly know enough that you can do your work, but don't try to be an expert, which means the only way you can avoid that is that you can say, I want to know how to get work done, but at the same time, I'm going to focus on one, two, or three things that I want to be one of the best at, right? And the only way to do that is if you keep up with them, right?
Yeah.
So...
yeah, it's like, especially when people sometimes... because sometimes I will interview people and they'll be like, oh, I'm amazing at this and this and this. And it's like, I don't believe you. And a lot of recruiters and people know that this is impossible. And a lot of people think they're very good at something, or like they're amazing at something, until they meet somebody that actually is... and then it kind of like humbles you. It happened to me at one point. I remember I was like, oh, I'm really good at MySQL. And I'm actually like, I knew how to create very complicated joins and do a lot of cool stuff. And I knew a lot of commands by, in memory. So I would create database and do whatever I wanted from memory. But then the interviewer was like, oh, if you're very good at MySQL, okay, I'm going to show you the output of this explain command. What does it mean? And I'm like, oh shit! Oops.
The knowledge is an ocean, right? You can keep going deeper and deeper, and you'll find more and more. especially in technology and in development where the ground keeps shifting from under us. Okay, so I want to know, do you learn by watching other people code? Do you learn by reading books, blog posts, or just experimenting and just trying different things? How do you learn?
Experimenting is the easiest way. It's the best way to learn. If you want to try a new programming language or something, I'll find a project or a code base and read through it, or you know, come up with like a little idea application and start with it. And reading is what I do a lot, I guess, too. Try to read a book at least every 2 months or so, some interesting book on either JavaScript or how to manage projects and stuff like that. And a few blog posts. I don't have any author or any website that I'm like faithful to. Just browse Reddit and see what people are sharing and read through them.
So do you listen to podcasts or do you watch any screencasts?
Not a lot. Mostly just reading.
Okay. So we were talking earlier when we started talking about your background. You mentioned that you did some kind of negotiation with FARC, which is a kind of a scary organization out of Colombia. What's the deal with that? What's the story?
Oh, so when I was, my family are politicians in Colombia, and I went to this high school for kids or sons of politicians and important people, bankers, whatever you go to. So when these negotiations were taking place, our school always had, we had like an event once a month or so where we'll have speakers come up and talk to the students and we'll be able to ask questions and stuff like that. And one day the person that was the head of the negotiating team came to our school to talk to us a little bit about how the process was going and all that. And we asked them like, hey, it would be an option to go there because it would be super interesting to go there. And our parents were super freaked out at first, but we ended up traveling a group of 16 kids to go meet with the negotiating team from the terrorist group and the government.
So you were observing, were you able to give any input?
We thought we did, I guess. We were kids and we were able to like print out some ideas that we had and give it to them, but they probably discarded them. And we spent about 4 days there. We met with a lot of like the members of the terrorist group, which was very interesting. They were a lot of their members were just people that were either forced into it or they were kind of like super poor and had no better chances at life, so they got drafted into it. They didn't really have like any political goal or anything. They were just a group of like mean people, I guess. I wanted to get rich with once they got involved with drug trafficking. It was a very interesting time. It's like seeing how people can live in these super extreme conditions, because it was also like kind of like in the jungle in the middle of nowhere. We were really allowed to know where we were being taken to.
Were you scared?
A little bit. Not a lot. There was a lot of journalists and people with us. So we were hoping that those guys were not going to be crazy enough to hurt us with so many cameras around.
I think this experience can really help you in your career. You're scared and you're at a negotiation with, you know, some people that don't really like each other and they have really hardened views. So it's like, you know, it's the developer community in general. Sometimes we take stands, tabs versus spaces, .NET versus Java, you know, Ember versus Angular. So that is like this. So we should put you in the middle. And I think you can use experience to mediate between all the developer groups. I think that could really help out. All right.
Definitely a really interesting experience having gone through that so early in life.
Mm-hmm. All right. So do you do anything to let people know, hey, I'm David Silva. I'm cool. I do all this fun stuff. Is there anything you do or do you think people should do, developers, to promote themselves, to let people know they exist and essentially market yourself and promote yourself to a point where if you need to change a job or if you need to, you know, move ahead in your company, then people will recognize you. Do you think that's something that's important to do, or is it just, hey, you know, happens if it happens?
It is definitely important. I don't do it anymore because I really like my job, and people, like a lot of people already know me, and I'm already super tired of the spam that I get from recruiters. But it is really important to have a polished LinkedIn, to go to good events, talk to recruiters. I advise people to talk to recruiters because it's their job to get you hired. So you can go to a recruiter and they will help you write your resume correctly, and they will help you like decorate things the way companies like it. And in general, it's important. Everybody has their own, find your calling, I guess. Like, everybody has their own way of seeing and doing things. So just find what makes you comfortable. You know, if you like programming language a lot or a project a lot, try contributing back to it on GitHub. If you feel that your thing is that you're very good at communicating, maybe find, you know, a way to get in touch with more people on technical support. It's the general, just, you know, find what you're best at and find other senior developers to learn from, because it's really hard to be known or to find a job or to become better at it if you're isolated from the community.
Yeah, it's really good advice. If you're a new developer, if you hitch yourself to a really sympathetic, empathetic senior developer, maybe work in a company where they encourage learning and growth, and also they're doing cool stuff. Just by associating yourself with those people, you will also grow with them, and they will take you along with them, right? They're not going to leave you behind. There are some organizations that I think that happens less frequently in the Silicon Valley, but there are some organizations that don't encourage that, and there's a lot of politics. It happens. But startup companies and Silicon Valley companies generally don't have that. So it's good that if you're able to associate yourself with good people, very, very quickly they can take you with them. So now, what's your advice for people hiring? Because you give really good advice for people who really need guidance. What about people who are hiring, let's say a manager or an HR, the HR person that needs to hire people? What should they do? What is your advice for them?
For the people hiring, something that I do that has helped me a lot when I had the chances to hire people was giving them a list of questions and topics beforehand. So that way, if they can manage to learn that in the week or the days leading up to the interview, they can practice and they can be, you know, perform better at the interview. Or if the list or everything looks too complicated, they, you know, can not apply, and it makes it easier for both of us. So they feel like knowing what your company needs and communicating that clearly with the candidates, it's extremely important.
I think communication is key in a lot of different scenarios. You have to put your best foot forward as a hiring person. Right? Because you want to attract the best people, and believe it or not, good developers or talented people have choices. So you want to show yourself to be accommodating. You want to show yourself to be attractive. So, communicate. If you want somebody who is good, then you have to prove first that you're good, because we get spammed. Developers, we get spammed by recruiters all the time. And most of the time, we just numb to that, right? And we don't pay attention to it. So obviously, I think good companies really know how to hire. Really top companies don't have as much problem attracting good talent. But the smaller companies, they struggle sometimes. And I think the one thing that they can do is be more accepting of different people. People of different backgrounds, people that may not fit the demographic or maybe the qualification scale criteria you have created for that position. Just be a little bit open. Don't make it about a bullet list. You need to have these 5 things, 4 years experience in these 5 things and 3 years experience in these 4 things. People are not like that, and their experiences are kind of, it needs to, you need to navigate their experience a little bit to get to the gist of what they're made of. And a lot of times you'll find somebody who doesn't really check off all the boxes that you have set in your job description, but they may be exactly the person that you need.
Exactly.
All right, David, it was a pleasure talking to you. And I think that any new developer, especially if you're an immigrant from South America, Central America, get in touch with David. I'm just going to volunteer you for that.
Sure.
Get in touch and ask him a question, because I think he's a very nice guy. So how can people get in touch with you? How do you have a website? Tell us a little bit about where they can find you online.
The easiest way to get in touch with me is probably my LinkedIn, because I don't really have a website. Kind of have one, but I don't pay attention to it. But LinkedIn is a good way to get in touch with me. Or my email, david@codecorgi.co.
All right. We're going to put all these links in the show notes for the episode. It was a great time talking to you, David. And I'm really thrilled
so
that we were able to do it. All right. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Have a great day.
See ya.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed the show. You can read the highlights and show notes with links on mentoringdevelopers.com/episode and the number of the episode. For example, mentoringdevelopers.com/episode 10 or /episode 25 and so on. Let me know what you think about this episode. If you'd like to ask a question or if you have a comment, you can email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Oh, and one more thing. I really want you to be part of the show, even if you are a little shy. So go ahead and type mentoringdevelopers.com/join in your web browser. This will open a Google form where you can tell me what topics interest you and what dates and times you're available for about an hour or so. Everyone is welcome, and I would be thrilled to get a chance to talk to you. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you at mentoringdevelopers.com/join.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.